Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. This is the Price Point Podcast. We are already on episode 5. It has been a whirlwind. Please make sure to go check out the first 4 episodes that are on our SoundCloud page. That is soundcloud.com/PricePointPodcast. Again, this is episode 5. We have had the privilege of interviewing several big name special guests. We'd like to thank them again. We had Kanan Smith on. He is a Nashville recording artist and a friend of mine. We've had James Laurinaitis, ex-NFL linebacker, All-American at Ohio State, and Don Wakamatsu, who is the bench coach of the Texas Rangers. So we are very excited to have this next guest who we are talking to today. He is a former big league pitcher for 4 teams, won the World Series with my Philadelphia Phillies in 2008. Without further ado, Brett Myers. Brett, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Awesome, man. I appreciate you taking some time, man. This was cool to get you on here. We had made a list of people that we had talked to in the past, either through coaching or whatever the case is, and your name came up, and you were gracious enough to say yes right away. So we definitely appreciate that, and glad to have you on.
No problem.
We'll kind of start with your childhood and growing up and, who was Brett Myers as a kid and, sports you played, all that kind of thing. So give us a little background on you as a child.
Well, I grew up boxing. My dad was a boxing promoter for over 30 years. And so he was doing this promoting and training fighters and stuff like that. So I grew up in the gym, but he was in Italy when I was younger, and he had my uncle take me to try out for baseball when I was 5. So that's kind of where it all began. And nobody knew that I was going to be, a good player or not, but I just had that mentality of, wanting to be successful. And I guess, when I was 7, I told my dad, I was watching a Braves game or a Cubs game, one of the 2, because that's all we had here in Florida. CBS or WGN.
Absolutely.
So I was watching the game one day, and I think it was Braves game because I remember being at night, and I asked, told my dad, I said, that's what I want to do one day. And my dad told me, he goes, well, 1 in a million make it. And I said, well, why can't I be that one? Mm-hmm. So, and ever since that day, I wanted to play in the big leagues. I just loved the game, and I loved competing, and boxing, was a way for me to, but just because that's what my dad was into. So I obviously did that. And I was in the gym all the time and stuff like that. So I probably stopped doing that when I was 12 or 13. I guess I just got tired of getting hit.
Yeah.
And it liked that too much. I mean, I loved competing. I loved doing it. And I was a very skilled boxer, but I think a lot of that one-on-one with the boxing and the competitive thing of fighting and stuff like that kind of helped me play baseball. Because I always felt like it was me versus them.
Absolutely.
Even if it was my friends. So, I always wanted to win. I always had that competitive attitude about myself. It even started at a young age, and that was one of the things that kind of drove me through my little league career all the way to, if you can call that a career, but my little league playing days up until high school.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of cool that you brought up the boxing thing. For those of you who didn't know that, I played college baseball in Philadelphia, so my team and I went to games all the time, and the way you pitched was like a boxer and kind of the bulldog mentality. So, would you agree with that? First of all, obviously, that's what everybody thought, and then if so, do you think you carried that? Did you learn that from boxing, and did you kind of take that into pitching? What were your thoughts pitching? Did you ever compare the two? You touched on it a second, but, tell us how that bulldog mentality, kind of that Oral Hershiser feel on the mound was translated into.
Well, I grew up watching Nolan Ryan and Roger Clemens. Those were my 2 favorites.
Okay.
I just watched how they carried themselves. And how they were mean pitchers.
Yeah.
And, Bob Gibbs, those other guys. I was just an old school baseball player that watched those guys play the game, mm-hmm. and watched how, for lack of better terms, pissed off every time they took the mound.
Absolutely.
And their hair was on fire.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I wanted to play the game. because I respected that, and those other teams and other players respected them because of that mentality that they had. So I just kind of took that mentality. Just, you know, you learn from other guys, and as a young kid, you learn by watching the game. Mm-hmm. You know, even kids watch enough of the game so they don't understand it as much, and then, you know, they don't understand making plays or certain defensive schemes that are going on because they're not watching the game. Well, I was a student of the game. I loved watching the, you know, it wasn't hard for me to pitch with my hair on fire or be a bulldog out there because, quite honestly, I did not like the other team at all.
Yeah.
I did not care for old school mentality. I mean, I had John Vukovich and Larry Boa as my managers, mm-hmm. and the Phillies organization, not very easy to come up in, meaning not in a bad way, but they just had guys that they put the coaches down there that were hard on us, and they ran us, and they worked us, and, you know, it was what I used to with the boxing.
Yeah.
'Cause, I mean, you train hard, you know, and that's the way I took it. I tried to train hard for each outing and train hard for each year and make sure best possible shape to where I could, you know, compete at a high level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting you said that, because on our previous show with James Laurinaitis, some of you probably heard that. He was an All-American linebacker at Ohio State. Brett, you probably know him. He's a big baseball fan too, and he touched on how kids these days are, you know, with all the social media stuff and everything, being at a game isn't being at a game anymore. And it, you know,
what they're doing these days.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but they're doing these days is I saw something the other day where a friend of mine was telling me a story, and I think they were at the Washington Nationals game, and they said, we're going to go get something to eat. And then by the seventh inning, they were looking for him, and they had missed half the game. He walked around the concourse, and they have an arcade room in there, and they're in there playing video games watching what they actually came to see was the baseball game. So these ballparks are trying to keep fans interested because, and that's why they're trying to speed the time up with all the baseball. They're trying to hurry up, you know, just to keep fans interested. And, you know, honestly, since my oldest son was, when I was playing in Philly, when he was born, since he was 2-3 years old, he would sit there in that seat and ask questions about what's going on every mm-hmm. single time and watching the game. And the same thing with my two younger sons. They're doing the same thing, asking me questions. Now, I always have baseball on because they play baseball. So, you know, I want them to understand the game because baseball actually taught me a lot about life as well.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's sad to see because, I mean, when you and I are probably close to the same age, but we grew up going to games. I was from Nashville, going to AAA Nashville Sounds games and keeping score, like keeping a scorebook. And you try to get young people now to do it, and they have no idea what they're doing. So it's just a different time. And that whole pitch clock and speeding up the game is a whole other conversation that we could go, you know, talk about for an hour. So that may be something we touch on.
You have to have a college physics degree to learn what all these launch angles and everything means these days. So
it's outrageous.
Who knows what they're doing? I don't have any idea about it. You know, I know I was never really a numbers guy. Mm-hmm. I was just out there trying to pitch to my strengths, and when situations came up where I need to pitch to their weakness, I would.
Exactly. And you know, that stuff is just all lost now, and it's kind of sad to see. But yeah, I mean, you got away with being you know, like we said, a bulldog guy, but also got a guy that knows, don't leave a 0-2 changeup chest high down the middle of the plate. Before we continue, we'll take a quick break to mention one of our sponsors. Warm Up Nutrition is a Boston-based company selling an all-natural and high-protein coffee. You can drink it black, add sweetener, mix with milk, or smoothies. 15 grams of protein per serving and zero sugar and zero carbs. Great for athletes on the go, professionals, or anyone in need of a nutrition energy boost. Save 15% off your order with code PRICEPOINT at checkout. That's 15% off with promo code PRICEPOINT at checkout. Now we'll get back to our interview with Phillies pitcher Brett Myers. Tell us about high school and, you know, what colleges were talking to you and how hard that decision was to decide whether to go into college or see what, you know, the teams and your agent were kind of telling you to do. Did you ever have your mindset on one thing or another?
Yeah, my goal was to play in the big leagues from the beginning. I was a decent student. I wouldn't say that I was like a straight A student, but I was a decent student. Mm-hmm. you know, I got my work done and stuff like that. I just, in my opinion, I didn't think I was going to be college material. Well, I had a lot of scouts coming into the house. I had to take these little personality tests. I guess that's what they called them. I don't know, but it was just like 100 or something questions, and it was just insane that I had to do that to before I had to get drafted or go throw a baseball. I mean, yeah. I had no idea what was going on. That was crazy to me. But I don't know if they do that anymore. But it was definitely crazy. They were supposed to figure out who I was for me marking C on every answer because I didn't care if I failed it or not.
That sounds like me in college, just putting C on the Scantron. It sounds like a Wonderlic test, kind of what quarterbacks have to do.
Yeah, so I didn't know what it was, and I didn't care. I just ran through them, and I did some. I did almost 30 of them.
Oh my gosh!
For every team, so it was crazy. And then draft day rolls around, and my agent's there, my whole family's there, and stuff like that. And I had no idea where I was going to go in the draft. I just knew that I was supposed to be in the top round, and you never know. You never know what teams need and stuff like that. But I had the Tampa Bay Rays calling, and they had the first pick, and I thought, so they were on me pretty hot, and I thought they were going to take me. I had no idea. And then, it came down to where actually the fourth pick, because we're listening on a computer on dial up. So, I mean, it sounds like it was ages ago, but it was 20 years ago. So,
absolutely.
So I get there and they run through the first three picks, Josh Hamilton, Josh Beckett, and Eric Munson, and I'm like, okay, I knew those guys were going to go in the top three.
Yeah.
And then the fourth pick, the Arizona Diamondbacks comes around, and they go Myers. And I'm like, holy crap, man, I just got – and then they go Corey. And I went, oh, man. So I was like – so we all thought that I was going to the Diamondbacks for at least a split second, but the Diamondbacks never called my agent or talked to it about anything. So it was crazy. So, and then it kept going and kept falling and kept falling, and then – there was some time in between each pick and everything. So the Milwaukee Brewers called my agent. They were probably on the fourth or fifth pick, or they called before the draft. It's hard to remember.
Uh-huh.
And just said, if Ben Sheets isn't there, we're going to take your guy. And we negotiated a deal and everything, like what they were going to pay and all that other stuff. So we were like ready to go to the Brewers.
Yeah.
And Ben Sheets, just after pick, after pick, after pick, nobody took him. And then by the time that 10th pick came around, I was like, well, now I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And nobody called after that, and stuff. So then the Seattle Mariners had the 11th pick. And I was like, oh, man, I didn't go there. And then the Phillies came up and they picked me. And I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, this is cool. I've never been out of Jacksonville, Florida, other than maybe North Carolina or something like that. I never really traveled, So, or maybe play some tournaments, but just – I've never been up north, and it was a crazy experience. And I know how Philly fans are just watching, knowing what the players that they have, because like I said, as a student of the game, I knew every Phillies player before I even got drafted. And just, that's the way I think my personality and the city of Philadelphia's personality matched up perfectly.
That's awesome.
So I felt good with that, with going to them.
Yeah.
And then, you think as a kid, you're like, oh, I just got drafted, man. I'm going to the big leagues. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You still got to, there's still a lot of work that you got to put in.
Absolutely.
And I thought that I was like, I used to say I can throw as hard as that guy right now. Why? I should be in the big leagues. That was my train of thought as a young kid. And after going through the minors for 2.5 years, I was like, yeah, it doesn't matter how hard I throw it.
Absolutely.
Will Clark told me when I remember they brought me up to Philly because I was top draft pick to watch a game, and I was on the field watching BP. I remember Will Clark coming over to me. He goes, how hard do you throw, boy? And I said, 98. And he goes, I don't give a damn. I could turn around a jet airplane. And I went, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Exactly.
And I just kind of, Will Clark was scary, man, because, he was one of my favorites too.
Absolutely.
So I was just kind of like, that was Will Clark. That was cool. That was cool as hell. But so, after all that hoopla and signing the deal, but the worst part about it was they signed, we did the thing, they drafted me in June, and they didn't sign me until like August something.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, man, what is going on? I want to go play baseball. But I couldn't. I just had to sit around and wait for them to sign everybody else. And then they finally signed me with the money that they had left over. I guess that's what they do, And
yeah.
So I was like, hey, here we go. And then they said, all right, we need you to report in a couple of days. They flew me up to Philly.
Yep.
When they flew me to Philly, I hand did the contract, threw a bullpen, watched a couple games, and they said, okay, send you back to Florida. And next thing you know, 2 days later, I'm in Clearwater getting ready to play in the Gulf Coast League.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was like, get on it. So,
yeah.
And I had no idea. I was just wanting to show them. I was a first rounder. I was like, I want to throw as hard as I can. I'm going to impress these guys.
Absolutely.
And, you know, but it wasn't the case. I learned a lot. They had me in the minors for 2.5 years, and I just I kept pushing and pushing and pushing just to get to the big leagues. And I finally had a chance. They invited me to big league spring training in 2002. And I went in there and I was dealing. I was dominating. I actually thought I had a chance to go from double A straight to the big leagues without going to triple A. And I was there the whole camp. I was there the whole camp. So I'm thinking, I'm going to make this team. And the last day of camp, they sent me to minor league camp. And I was just devastated.
Oh, I bet.
Like, I was devastated. But you know, I was like, okay, you don't think I'm ready? That's fine. You know, and then I realized the business part of it and everything like that, and it would have cost them extra money down the road.
Yeah.
I understood the business part of it later, but not when I was 20 years old. You know?
Of course, of course. And was Francona the manager then? I think he was in 2002, wasn't he, of the Phillies?
It was Boa.
Oh, Boa. Yeah, Larry Boa. That's right. Okay. Yeah, and was it – how did you feel when – obviously a big disappointment, but did that kind of make you more motivated? Like, okay, well, I'm going to make the best of this, and I'm going to get called up by the All-Star break or by, you know, the September call-ups.
My whole thing was to – everybody's always told me I couldn't do something in life. They've always told me I can't. So my whole thing was when they did that, I'm like, oh, you think I can't? All right, watch me.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go down. I can, you know. And so, you know, then I get the call, and after it was – July. It was almost about the trade deadline, I would think. It was definitely after the All-Star break and everything. And they said, hey, you're getting called up. And I was getting so much. Like, I had a guy on the team in AAA named Pete Zamora.
Mm-hmm.
And he played big leagues for a little bit, but he was still in AAA with me. And he would trash talk and talk about how much better Mark Pryor was than me and all stuff. He's in the big leagues, you're not. Blah, 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 and everything. So it kind of worked out because we'd watch him on TV, and Pete would always go, he's way better than you, and he would piss me off, man. They'd fire me up because I'm like, no, he ain't. You know?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It turned out that when they called me up, I was sitting in there with Pete, and I'm like, they just called me up.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And
yeah,
I said,
that's awesome.
You remember 3-4 days ago when we were watching Mark Pryor pitch? I said, guess who's pitching against Mark Pryor? Me.
That's incredible.
And I said we're gonna find out who's better, aren't we?
That's a great story.
So it was pretty cool, and I ended up beating him 2-1.
Oh my
I threw
gosh.
8 innings, 2 hits, and faced Sammy Sosa and all those guys. And it was in Wrigley Field, which was even cooler because I grew up watching the Cubs. I grew up watching that stadium. I'd come home from school, I'd have GN on, watch them. And after that game, the Braves would come on. I'd watch the Braves on TBS. So
absolutely.
In Wrigley Field, and after growing up as a fan and watching Reinsberg, Andre Dawson, you know, absolutely, and Rick Sutcliffe, like all the guys, and I'm going, man, this is freaking awesome.
That's
I'm
incredible.
In Wrigley, and so I kind of I wasn't really nervous, I would say, for it. I just knew I had a job to do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I didn't. The first thing was when I got to the hotel, I was like, this is the nicest hotel I've ever seen in my life. And it's a Westin hotel, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't. I said, this has to be a $600 room. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I was staying in Best Westerns and stuff, which
exactly.
I thought were nice too. I didn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
So I expected to go in and see my roommate in the bed. Like, you know, two beds in there. That's what you do in the minors. You have a roommate.
Exactly.
And I'm like, this whole room's mine?
Yeah.
I had like a whole king bed in there. I'm like, what is going on, man? So it was funny because that night I got in and the next night my family flew in. So I had to go pick them up at the airport at like 4 or 5 in the morning. And I was pitching that day. So I got some sleep, got up, got a car to the airport to go pick them up. Picked them up, brought them back to the hotel, and then went back to bed, got up, and went to the field. So it was kind of a crazy day for me.
Oh my gosh.
But it was good. It was, I mean, that was that was you know, 17 years ago, I guess. Gosh. But it was a fun experience, man. I just, you know, it's sometimes you'd like to relive it, and sometimes you'd like to go, you know what, that was over with, you know,
absolutely.
Let's move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to touch on what you're doing now after moving on from baseball. But I do want to say, I think everybody knows Mark Pryor, as good and as much potential he had, unfortunately wasn't very long lived, as his, you know, career kind of came to a quick halt with injuries and stuff. So,
one again, I beat him on the fifth, and then I played.
That's true. That's true. He's probably not your you're probably not his best friend. I think he'd admit that.
No.
we're going right into you know, you did talk about that transition. You know, like, okay, well, that was awesome, but you know, that's in the past. It was fun while it lasted, but you know, it's kind of time to move on. And some guys move on by oh, by the way, Ryan Ludwig is a friend of mine. If I asked him once, probably 8 years ago, the top five hitters he loved to face and the top five hitters he hated, and you were in the ones that he hated to face. So
really?
Yeah.
Because I didn't like facing him either.
No, he barrels up a lot, or he did.
Yeah, so, he could hit.
Yeah,
he
and I don't know, without looking at stats, I don't know what he hit against you, especially in 08. I think 08 was his all-star season with St. Louis. So yeah. He hit.
Well,
like,
I wasn't in his league, so I didn't.
Correct.
Luckily, I had to face him maybe once a year or so.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be happy when he hears this because he'll listen. So,
yeah.
But anyway, so like Ryan Ludwig is now, he is the you know, he's a hitting consultant with the Cardinals. So as he did move past his playing career, he still stays in the game. Some people do. You do with Five Star Baseball in Jacksonville, but you also are in music now. And I like guys like you who are, you know, athletes and in the music, because I grew up in Nashville, so I was around both all the time. So this is kind of I'm kind of nerding out here because I want to know this as well. But what is your music career? What is it looking like now? And who are your big influences, favorite artists, or musicians? You know, where do you play? Did you get to in the clubhouse, did you get to jam out to, you know, Montgomery Gentry and those guys, or was it always hip hop? And so kind of explain that side of it as well. And then, like I said,
I'll tell you how it got started was a pretty cool story. Obviously, pitching in the big leagues and stuff like that, there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
You know, after you get all your work done, you get there early, you get all your work done, then you got hours to wait around and do basically nothing.
Absolutely.
After, you know, so, and you're there, you get to the field at you know, 12:30 or something, then you get all your work in and 2 hours, then you got another 2 hours before BP, and you're going, what am I supposed to do? Well, yeah. Fortunately for me, I loved Lynyrd Skynyrd, that's all, and the Outlaws, like Southern Rock was like my biggest thing. So, and my dad always used to play that stuff for me when I was a kid, and, mm-hmm. and I loved Skynyrd and AC/DC and stuff like that. And I was never really like a huge country fan. Mm-hmm. With anybody, but I always listened to the Southern rock stuff and everything like that. So I went to our head video coordinator that ran everything in there. He was actually a guitar teacher before he took the job with the Phillies.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, heck, we were good friends, you know, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to get a guitar. Why don't you teach me some stuff? And we'd sit in there and I'd be like, show me a D real quick, or show me an A real quick, or mm-hmm. something like that. And I'd just sit in there and practice my fingers and everything while, you know, nobody was in there obviously working. And then on the road, he took me, like, we'd go to the hotel room, order a bucket of beers, and just sit there and play. He'd teach
that's
me
amazing.
Songs and
yeah.
stuff like that. So that's really when it kind of started for me. And I never really took it serious. I took it more of as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably 2013, I'd been playing guitar for 11 years or so, and I've met a lot of guys that played in the industry and stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I have this. For years, I've always wanted to write my own stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I want it to be like Skynyrd,
yeah,
but a little heavier,
mm-hmm.
But my own little twist on it, you know?
Absolutely.
With my own words and stuff, my experiences or whatever like that. So, in 2013, I called up a buddy of mine who played in the band, and he wasn't doing anything, and he drove to Cleveland from Chicago, and we started writing songs. Like, I just started writing lyrics and everything. I had no idea what I was doing, and he was trying to help me and everything. And then, so we kind of went and bought this kind of recording equipment, and you know, it wasn't good, but we did it through GarageBand and stuff. And
yeah,
and I thought it was great because I was like, I just did a song.
Exactly.
This is awesome. And then I listened to it and it sounds terrible. Now, now it sounds terrible because it wasn't done right, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know we were doing it. It's like a demo.
Mm-hmm.
So I got back home after, you know, I got injured in 2013 and I was pretty much out the whole year. And I got home and it probably, I don't know, 2014 or 15, I guess I would say. And my buddy, who I went to high school with and didn't know I that he played in Puddle of Mud, I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea. So he followed me on Facebook and I saw some of his posts that he has a studio at his house and that's what he does now.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like, oh, I said, oh, that's pretty cool. I said, hey, man, I got these three songs that I did on GarageBand. Let's see if you can, like, master them or do, you know, master them, make them sound better, you know, use it, whatever. I have no idea. Or we just redo them at your place. I don't know. So he goes, why don't we play some golf? I said, okay, let's play some golf. I start playing golf, and then we start talking and hanging out. And next thing he knows, he goes, all right, let's do a song together. I'm like, okay. Do a song. So I did a song with him. And he's like, dude, he goes, first off, he says, all right, now get in there and sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, absolutely not. No, sir. I'm not getting in there. You can kiss my ass.
Yeah.
And he goes, you have to, it's your song. I said, dude, you were in the band.
Uh-huh.
You were in two bands and you were the lead singer. You go sing it. You're the one that took voice lessons. You're the one that did all this stuff. Don't tell me. I'm just the guy that wants to write words.
Yeah.
And come up with a cool song. That's it. I don't want nothing to do with getting in that booth and trying to sing. I don't even sing in the shower.
Exactly.
So then probably 2 weeks goes by and he calls me. He goes, hey, man, I'm having a couple people over. Why don't you come over and have some drinks? Yeah, sure. Why not, man? Maybe something fun will come up, you know? So he goes to fire me beers and we go to the studio and hang out and we're just doing some stuff or whatever. And I must have had probably, I don't know, 7 beers or so. And he goes, all right, get in there, sing. I'm like, oh no.
You were still a little nervous after the 7.
I was, well, not really. I was like, okay, fine. But yeah. I was like, I don't know. All right, fine. Just do it. Whatever.
That's awesome.
I didn't hear at that point. So I did that song. And then he's telling me, he's like, dude, you can sing, man.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, I can't. But thanks for entertaining it. Yeah. But had fourth album's almost done now. So
that's incredible.
You know, and played shows with Colt Ford, The Lax, Uncle Cracker, Molly Hatchet, Luke Combs.
Mm.
Oh, just some stuff like that. We're opening for Craig Morgan in July 4th in Oregon.
Oh my gosh.
We're opening for 38 Special in November.
No way. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of the bands that like I grew up with listening to, I'm going, awesome.
That's incredible.
I get to get on stage in front of them and show them what we got. And the good thing, the thing is that my whole band, and this is what made me want to keep going and playing shows and doing the stuff, is that I have two guys that played in Puddle of Mud in my band.
Yeah.
And an original member of Shinedown band.
That's incredible.
And a member of Cold in my band. And my drummer's dad was the drummer for Rosalind Collins.
Oh my gosh.
So like I have a superstar lineup.
That's incredible.
Three guitar players, bass, you know.
Yeah.
And drums and stuff. And so the thing is, why would they put their name on my name and get up on stage saying that they played in all these bands and if they thought we sucked?
Correct. If they didn't believe in you and thought.
Right.
Yeah.
So that made me feel good and comfortable to know that, hey, we're going to go do this.
Oh, my
gosh. And we're going to. So we've been doing it now. I think my first live show we did was 3 years ago today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that is amazing.
The funny story behind that was because I wouldn't get in there and sing unless I had a few beers in the studio and it's just me and him. Right. Uh-huh. So I told him this too. I was being funny. I said, I'm never going to play a live show ever.
Yeah.
And I said, unless it's in an arena.
Uh huh.
And that's a joke. Okay. Cause you know, only the big dogs play in the arena.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. That's like George Strait's territory.
Yeah. So I was being funny.
Yeah.
Well, our arena football team called me up and asked me if I wanted to play a halftime show in front of their
crowd.
And I went, oh no. I stuck my foot in my mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily they gave me a month and a half notice.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh crap. So all right, what do I got to do to make this happen? How do I do this? What do I need? So
yeah.
I'm like, so I relied on my guys, and I didn't even have a band.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have a band.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to put all this together and learn how to do the stuff on stage and everything and stuff like that. So I was like, oh my God, I set my foot in my mouth. So luckily I had professionals around me, just much like I did in baseball, to teach me about the business and the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're still around. We're still helping, and I've learned a lot from it. But that's how the whole music thing started. And now here I am. I have some guys that are on my albums that I would only dream of just hanging out with.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my God. So that's helped me a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Moving forward in the industry. So people know, you know, what the name is. And even on when we started the thing, I didn't even want to put my actual name on it. I wanted to call us like the Backwoods Band or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I wanted to come up with some name and put it on there. My producer, Damon, the guy that played in Puddle, he goes, you can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want nobody knowing it's me. He goes, you have to tell them it's you. And I'm like, great. I'm just going to catch so much criticism from this and get torn up over it and everything. And he says, well, if you want to get your – he goes, that's the only marketing tool you have is your baseball career.
Wow.
People know you from baseball.
Yeah.
So use that to your advantage.
That's
whether
awesome.
It's good or bad, you will get the stuff out there. Because he goes, for all the bad you're going to get, you're going to get the same amount of people that like it.
That's incredible.
And I said, well, I guess so.
Yeah. Goes,
so that's how it all ended up.
That's amazing.
Where we're at now, our next album comes out June. It's
okay.
Going to come out in June.
Yeah,
so
promote yourself a little bit.
Well, it's almost done.
Yeah.
I mean, the album's almost done. We have three other ones that are out. And
that's amazing.
And the new one comes out in June. So, and we're about to, supposedly it's about to go on tour.
Wow.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
In June. That's the reason why I'm going to release the album in June.
Yeah. That's a good time.
Right. So, so that's going to be fun. We finally got a booking agent and everything. So we're going to see if this thing can take off or not. And if it does, that's great. If it doesn't, we'll keep working at it.
Well, that's awesome, man. And I'm rooting for you, and everybody else is too. I can assure you that. And before we let you go, are there any – you won the World Series in 2008. Still one of my favorite days of my life watching you guys when Brad Lidge struck out. I think it was Eric Hinsky. Was that right?
Yep.
Yeah, so he struck out after the whole rain delay thing. And you can go look it up, listeners, if you want. But how was that moment? Obviously, you know, if I'm getting goosebumps and tears crying from a couch, you know, that's got to be a pretty good rush. But would you – What do you think's more exciting to you know to be able to play on tour with these guys who have had you know long tenures in bands such as you know Puddle of Mud and Cold and stuff like that or winning the World Series, and how does that compare, do you think, you know, even so far, how is that compared to it?
Well, the reason the music thing, when I first played that first show, the bug came back. So like professional athletes and any athletes, that adrenaline rush is what you love.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what you feel. So getting up on stage in front of people and the butterflies that come before that makes it feel like that I'm back out there pitching again, no matter what game.
That's
you know?
Incredible. Yeah.
And you have to deliver. So there's a lot of comparison, but I never had to remember words when I was out there pitching.
That's a good point.
You know, so, but I had to remember hitters and where their weaknesses were and stuff like that and everything. So the whole music thing is kind of more or less helping me still chase that, you know, that adrenaline rush that I had. So
absolutely.
And playing with these guys and everything, that's cool. That's cool and everything, but they made it to the top too.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Like these guys have gold and platinum records on their wall, and I won a World Series, and everything like that. So with that being said, we've all been to the top. Now we're starting back from the bottom.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
I think that all of us find that because we're all kind of the same. People tell us that we can't do something, so we're gonna start from the bottom again,
absolutely,
and just go right back to the top,
man.
If people allow us, you know. So And that's the biggest challenge for me. It's like I said, you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to prove you wrong, show you that I can.
Yeah.
You know? And fortunately for me, baseball's given me that opportunity to do this with the music, because if I hadn't won a World Series, or if I was, you know, or haven't done some things, you know, in the game, and you know, made friends in the game and done stuff and played, had a few good seasons and stuff like that, then this music, nobody would even give a damn.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, this has been great, man. I appreciate it. And like I said, not just informative for the listener, but there's a lot in here that I didn't even know about that is infatuating. And gosh, we can't thank you enough for being on. I'm sorry. For those of you who don't know, obviously we had a couple technical difficulties here on our end. So I guess we're using that GarageBand stuff that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Hey,
but hey,
everybody's got to start somewhere.
That's true, man. We're brand new, and we're starting from the bottom, and we're going to grow too. So I completely appreciate it, man. It's been great. And last thing, we'll let you go. Do you know of anybody in the big leagues now, or even down the minor league system, who comes up to bat to a Brett Myers song?
Yes, actually, Taylor Davis did last year. I don't know if he still does now, but Taylor Davis is funny because my old pitching coach is with the Cubs in AAA.
Okay.
And Taylor Davis was in AAA, and he came up to dig in one of my songs.
Yeah, I know the song.
He is now in the big leagues, and I told him, don't be a chicken. Play the same dang thing that got you there. Okay?
Seriously.
So I said, don't forget what got you there. So keep the same thing going. So, you know, it's good for him. But, that's the only guy I know.
Okay, well, maybe there will be more after this new album. But
that'll be great.
Well, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much again. And best of luck to you in the music stuff. And, Brett, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for bearing with me.
All right. Thank you.
All right, man. That was good stuff right there from Brett Myers. Brett, thank you so much again for being on the show with us. We look forward to hopefully having you back in the near future. And who knows, maybe we can have you in-house for a little podcast concert. That may be something we could look into. But anyway, thank you again, Brett. It was great talking to you. This is probably one of my favorite interviews that we've done here on the show. Obviously, it's going to be one of the best because we've only had a few, but this one was so informative to me. The other guests I've known a little bit more about, and this one, I was kind of sitting back here and as a fan and a listener, because some of this stuff was new to me. And he's a perfect guest just because he kind of ties into everything that we are all about, which is the business side of sports and entertainment. He kind of touches on a little bit of everything. He has a foot in both sides, really. And I mean, there's quite a few things in here in this interview that we just had with him that really stood out to me. And the first thing really was how he kind of gave up boxing, how his dad was a fight promoter. And, you know, we got to see the business side of that sport, which is probably a lot different than the business side of baseball or hockey or basketball or football, you know, just being around that. And then all of a sudden, like he said, he was watching a Cubs and a Braves game one time and just said, hey, this is what I want to do. And it kind of changed. And from that day on, that was kind of what he was chasing. And I just thought that was just really cool to hear. And then the stuff he talked about on draft day, not a lot different than James Laurinaitis with the whole waiting thing and what it's like, you know, to wait and see kind of where you're picked. They kind of tell you where, like he mentioned the Brewers at pick 10 that year, I think 02. That they, you know, they said if Ben Sheets is gone at this pick, you're going number 10 to Milwaukee. Of course, Ben gets picked and he has to wait and has no idea where he's going. So, you know, can't imagine what it's like sitting in there on draft day. A little different for baseball. You're, you know, like he said, you're at home on the dial-up internet. So just the differences now and what it was like, you know, 17 years ago in 2002. It was a little... I sat back a little, like I said, just kind of soaking it in because I'm a diehard Phillies fan, and I remember him pitching for that World Series team in 2008. That one, you know, just talking to him kind of brings back those memories and, you know, got goosebumps when we were talking. So we're going to kind of touch on a few things in closing. I really wanted to talk about the Masters, and we had kind of given our predictions from last week for which last week when we recorded on Friday, we were through or almost through two rounds, So we kind of gave predictions for the weekend part. And it was funny that neither one of us had even brought up Tiger Woods. If you listen back, I think Koepka came up. Molinari might have come up. A couple other names like that. But Tiger Woods' name wasn't mentioned. And looking back at that, how stupid we were. Nate's shaking his head at me saying, no, he did pick. Again, that tells you how much I listen to Nate. But he apparently did mention Tiger Woods, and he was dead on with that pick. Anyway, Tiger Woods won his fifth green jacket, and 11 years after his last majors win. That's correct, right? 12 years ago? He won in 2005. 14 years ago was his last Masters win, and I believe 11 years ago was his last major golf tournament win. Just sit there and think about that for a second. I think Tiger Woods for golf is, he was a trailblazer for the game of golf. And really, what's most cool about this whole story is when I was growing up and as a kid, we had the Tiger Woods fever. We had the, you know, the red Nike shirts and the TW hats. The guys in their 30s, girls in their 30s, even younger and a little bit younger, a little bit older, remember that. And now, winning the Masters and his whole comeback story, you kind of see that recirculating. And it was just really cool to see, because now I'm not even looking at this, but I can guarantee you that the Tiger Woods Nike hat is probably one of the most top-selling sports purchases you can buy right now online. And we're seeing that kind of come full circle. It's even more special now because of everything he went through. And right before that ceremony, when he made that putt, I think it was a short 3-foot par putt, but that raw emotion that came out of him, it was just incredibly moving. And as he walked off the green with the, you know, gallery all around him, walks up to his family and picks up his son and hugs him and kisses him. And it was just kind of cool, because in 1997, after his first Masters victory, some 22 years ago, when he won it, his first Masters, his first green jacket, when his dad did the same thing to him. Just crazy how, you know, if you look at those pictures side by side, just how moving that is. So, Tiger, man, I can't, I know you're probably not listening, but, you know, everybody that watched it, if you weren't moved by that moment, by him sinking that putt, gosh, I don't know if you know how much of an impact Tiger Woods has had on the golf and the sports world. I'm going to get a little bit heated here, because those people that are hating on Tiger Woods, and you see it if you're on social media at all, you'll see a lot of people in his corner. You'll also see a lot of those holy roller people who think they've never sinned in their life, crucifying the guy for having a DUI, for cheating on his wife. No, I don't agree with that lifestyle at all, but I will tell you that everybody who is alive today has at one point sinned or screwed up or whatever you want to say that Tiger did and lived that lifestyle or whatever. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm one that's happy for him and proud of him. He overcame demons. He fought. He scratched. And now guess what? He's wearing the green jacket. He's at the top of the golf world, not just the golf world, but probably in all sports if you look at it. Yes, hockey playoffs are going on. Yes, basketball playoffs are going on. Yes, the Major League Baseball season just started. But Tiger Woods' name is everywhere. Tiger Woods' face is everywhere online, on TV. Everywhere you look, it's Tiger, and well-deserved. Tiger, I love you. I'm proud of you. That was awesome. It's got to be, we were just talking, Nate and I, about what are the greatest comeback stories in sports history, and we both agree this is top three, maybe even probably, if we're talking solo, you know, this is probably number one. We talked about the movie Miracle, and that whole story with the U.S. team coming back after getting demolished by Russia. I can't remember the scores, like 7-0. Came back. Everybody knows the movie Miracle. And if you don't, please go watch it. It's incredible. Just kind of recaps the story of the Lake Placid Olympics back in the 80s when they came back and you know, defeated Russia to go to, a lot of people think that was the gold medal game. It wasn't. It was to go to the gold medal game, which I can't remember who they beat there, but anyway, that's up there. Of course, the Michael Jordan comeback when he came back with the Wizards, going back to the number 23 after his initial comeback with the Bulls wearing 45. Both of those comebacks were incredible, but I really believe this is the top comeback maybe of all time. So Tiger Woods, congratulations. These same people that are crucifying you are the same, you know, people that haven't left their mom's house. They're 40 years old. They don't want to do anything but pretty much criticize everybody else, you know, that have a life, really, you know, while you kind of sit there and eat your bonbons and marshmallows. Tiger Woods, we're proud of you. Congratulations. I love good hard workers. I love a good comeback story. This is up there with probably the greatest of all time. So, again, congratulations, Tiger Woods. Last episode, we kind of touched on the epidemic that is kind of plaguing the sports world, really. And being an event director with an event, a tournament company, really, I have seen this firsthand, where how bad umpires, referees get treated, whether that be on the baseball field, basketball court, lacrosse field, whatever. These fans that think they're entitled to be able to say whatever they want to, and the same with the coaches, and just verbally abuse, and you know, to say anything other than the word abuse isn't doing it justice, because these guys are getting abused. And we've seen this shortage of officials, really, you know, kind of across the globe, and especially in youth sports, which is just, like I said last time, an epidemic. And we had touched on the basketball referee in Paducah, Kentucky. This happened less than a month ago, literally getting beat inches to his death, and how ridiculous that is, and how that contributes to other officials and stuff that see that and say, you know what, my life isn't worth, you know, a 2-hour game getting paid, you know, whatever, $60. And this is something that has been, you know, we've seen a decrease in referees and umpires over the last few years. And it's gotten to a point where now tournament providers are using one-man mechanics. Or I heard recently, I won't name who it is, but there was a tournament that ran literally with a dad, I think, calling balls and strikes from behind the pitcher's mound. And, you know, you hear stories like that and wonder, oh, why couldn't they get umpires, or why couldn't this basketball tournament get referees? Well, it's because they're getting beat inches to their death. And so there's now these kind of these platforms and agendas of these tournament providers saying, okay, we see what's happening here, and we're going to make sure these umpires and these refs and these officials feel like they're backed, because, you know, they're kind of sitting targets, sitting ducks out there behind home plate, out in the field, at midcourt, on the baseline, wherever they are, just sitting ducks, these, you know, verbal abusers of these parents that, you know, think it's okay to drop F-bombs and tell them how much they suck, or these coaches coming in, an 8-year-old baseball game, coming in, running out of the dugout, spitting in their face while they try to speak. It's just nasty. And again, you know, being a tournament director, we unfortunately see that just about every tournament that we run. You know, we don't want to spend a ton of time talking about this, but it is a sad epidemic that's kind of plaguing the youth sports world. And if I was a 10-year-old baseball player and I saw parents and coaches act like that, I can assure you that I would have been burned out and said, you know what, this isn't worth it. Let me go play the xylophone or the harmonica, because I swear to you, my mom won't yell at my music teacher. So a little bit of humor there, but it is not a funny subject. It is a serious subject that is unfortunately sweeping and plaguing this nation. There are some, you know, circumstances, of course, where the official is in the wrong. I mean, we're in the middle of NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball. I think Angel Hernandez is a very hated umpire behind the plate. And these are the best of the best. These are umpires of the biggest sports leagues in the world. They miss calls. I think last night I was watching the Predators Stars game, and there is a fan sitting right outside the penalty box, just giving it to, I think it was Austin Watson of the Preds, sitting in the penalty box, and they stop the game. Refs go over there. I don't know if it was the guy in the penalty box or a ref on the ice, skates over there, gets security down there. They remove the official, the officials remove the fan from the game because apparently he crossed that line. And I'm a sports fan as well. And you put me in an arena after a couple or a few Labatt Blues, I'm probably saying a few things I shouldn't either. And so I get the fan side of it. You're paying good money to watch your team play. It's the NHL playoffs. You're probably spending $600 on a ticket. You want to see the right call made. Your guy got tripped. They didn't call it. And you're just pissed off because he missed a call or because a call didn't go your way on the other end. I get that. That is the human element of sports. And all this talk about robot umpires has got to be the most ridiculous stuff I've ever heard. But we're getting to that point where there are just simply people that don't want to get abused. We're coming to the age where it's now the millennials that are stepping into the roles of being an umpire, being an official. And if you're like me, I don't like to be yelled at. I couldn't do the job they're doing. These guys are out there, especially at the youth level, after they're working, you know, 10-hour shifts, doing whatever they do for a full-time job, getting out there to make extra money to provide for their family and be out there so these kids can play a game. These kids can play while these refs are getting verbally abused, their life's threatened. It's just an absolute atrocity and something that we have to stop. And there are steps being taken by tournament providers that say, yeah, you can boo, you can tell him how much he sucks, but when you cross that line, we will remove you. We back these officials. We need to make these officials feel like they're in a safe work environment where they're not going to get beat up like that guy who got beat up half to hell. And we're going to back them. And I love the movement of these tournament providers that are doing that because it is an epidemic. It has been a plague, and it gets worse and worse by the day. What we want to kind of do now is last week we made some NBA and NHL kind of predictions going into the playoffs. I think we were maybe a game in, maybe two games in to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. But since then, a lot has happened. I think I picked Tampa Bay Lightning in the East to make a run. And as the one seed, it wouldn't really be a run. I think a lot of people expected them to be at least in the Stanley Cup Finals, if not winning it and hoisting the cup over their heads come June. But they got swept. And it's funny because James Laurinaitis, in our interview with him, he talked about not wanting to play the Tampa Bay Lightning because he is, from Columbus and is a Big Jackets fan. So I don't even know if the Columbus Blue Jackets fans saw that coming. And if you say that you did, you're nothing but a liar. You just keep sitting on your throne of lies. That is not something that anybody saw coming. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to have to change our pick in the East. I still, you know, I think as long as Ovechkin's on the ice, they've got to be the favorites. So I say Washington and, in the West. I got to go with my Nashville Predators. Of course, if I picked anybody but them, you know, I shouldn't be talking hockey. So Washington Capitals, Nashville Predators, Stanley Cup Finals. But we are tied up with Dallas right now in the first round, 2-2 after a terrible loss last night on the road in Dallas. We're looking to bounce back. But that's my predictions. Anything can happen just like that first round with the Jackets and the Lightning. Nobody saw that coming. That's the beauty of hockey, though. You just get in the playoffs and anything can happen. An 8 seed can sweep a 4 seed – or an 8 seed can sweep a 1 seed and 4. We saw that just a couple years ago in my aforementioned Nashville Predators sweeping the Chicago Blackhawks. Still one of the greatest four games of sports of my lifetime. But we'll transition into the NBA playoffs. My producer and friend here, Nate, is a diehard Warrior fan. And I promise you, he just ate a bag of Takis, by the way. And I don't know if it's the Takis making him sweat, making his face moist. But I will say he's sweating bullets. It's the Warriors, his beloved Warriors from the Bay Area, just blew a 31-point lead a couple nights ago at home. Nate, it was at home. What the heck? And now they're in L.A. facing a decent Clipper team, 1-1 when they should be well in cruise control of this series. He's panicking. He is sweating, and I'm not sure if it's the Takis or the nerves or probably a mix of both. Those Takis ain't nothing to screw with, but in the West, it's wide open. I still think the Warriors get it done. I think they, kind of roll through the rest of this series. I think they come out gunning and hit about 35 three-pointers tonight between Curry, Thompson, and probably Durant. And in the East, I'm a Knicks fan. It's hard to pick any East team that's not the Knicks. They finish like 64 games out of a playoff spot, so I really don't give a dang about anybody coming out of the East, but I think it's actually I'm a big Giannis fan. I'd love to see Giannis win it all, but I'm gonna stick with I'm gonna say Golden State. I think Denver's gonna make a run here, but it'll be Golden State, Milwaukee, and Milwaukee winning the series. So that's kind of my prediction. Nothing really has changed since last time we talked, but it is the best time of year to be a sports fan with baseball season starting up. We got the Masters just finishing, which was obviously incredible. You know, the football. Oh. NFL schedule release was last night. It is an absolute travesty from the pits of hell that the Tennessee Titans did not get one primetime game. They didn't get a Thursday night game, They didn't get a Sunday night game, and they sure as hell didn't get a Monday night game. And I am not a very happy camper here, Nate. I am not happy because the Cleveland Browns, by the way, yeah, the Cleveland Browns got better in the offseason. But did you see, and you can nod since you're not on this show technically today, you're trying to big league us, but did you see whoever it was picked the Browns to go 16-0? Yeah, he's shaking his head like he doesn't believe me. This is a true story. Somebody on ESPN picked the Cleveland Browns. It was bad enough for them to pick them over the Titans in week one, which clearly is not happening. But to pick the Cleveland Browns to go 16-0, whoever it was that picked this, the Cleveland Browns, the team that just 2 years ago didn't win a game, he's picking them to go 16-0. And this is a channel that is slowly losing fans because a lot of stuff that's going on with them. But they're going to lose another fan, another Tennessee Titans fan here that's going to beat the hell out of the Cleveland Browns in week one. And Mike Mizanin, a.k.a. The Miz, I know you're listening here, and I know you're a Browns fan. Let's make a bet, man. Let's make a bet on week one. Titans probably by double digits on the road. But it is an absolute travesty that we did not get a Monday night game, a Sunday night game, or even a Thursday night game. Maybe they get a Thursday night game, but nobody watches those anyway. I'm just furious. But at least we have the schedule out. We can start making our predictions, some that aren't as ludicrous as 16-0 for the lowly Cleveland Browns. Sorry, Browns fans out there. I don't believe it. I'm rooting for you outside of week one, but I don't see that happening. And then the draft coming up in the best city in the world, Nashville, Tennessee. That is next Thursday night. I can't wait. Nate can't wait. There's always some shakeups. I'm excited to see what happens here. So that'll wrap up episode 5 of The Price Point. Thank you for tuning in. We had some great stuff in that interview with Brett Myers. We had some great stuff in the conversation about Tiger Woods. Again, if you haven't seen how he celebrates after he wins, go back and watch it. If it doesn't move you, you may just not be not have a heart. You're like the lion in Wizard of Oz or Dorothy or whoever it is that doesn't have a heart. Go back and watch it. It's great stuff. Thank you again for tuning in. We have special guests lined up for you for a long, long, long time to come. Can't wait to get there. Can't wait for you to listen to those. Thank you for listening. This is The Price Point.